I don't even know that we're going to need a topic here. I got like a whole bunch of things that we can talk about.
We have 25 minutes max.
Yeah, honestly. But we don't need a topic is what I'm saying.
Right, you have to have a topic.
No, I you're not listening to me. We don't need a topic. 25 minutes of non-topic photography discussion and then whammo, Amber, done.
Yeah, the Amber is the topic.
Well, there we go.
I thought that was clear. Hello and welcome to episode 227 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubing in Germany, and with me as always is
Adam, Vancouver primed.
Are you excited because you finally have your 227 joke?
No, I don't think it's very funny.
But this is the one you've been excited about for 1.5 months, and now...
Yeah, too much buildup.
All right, kind of like The Hangover 2, right?
exactly like that.
That's what I was thinking. So what's going on, Adam?
Photography mania.
Before that, you know what else is going on?
Amazon.
Yeah. Since we last spoke, I did a little something called my taxes.
Yeah.
And one of the things, obviously, we have to declare is the Amazon stuff, the income.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's basically the only time I go through and see, you know, what's going on.
Sure.
Amazon wise. And so it's pretty cool because what you can do is they'll actually tell you what items were purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And then your cut of each item, that kind of thing. See, I mean, it's a huge long list, so I don't really go through it all, but I just kind of quickly looked at, you know, just pulled some random stuff up and looked and thought, what an eclectic list of things, like non-photography related,
mm-hmm.
that people have purchased, have taken the time to purchase through our site.
Okay.
So I wanted to say I very much appreciate that. Like it's one thing if you're going to go buy a camera and you go, oh, I'm going to support the camera guys, the photo podcast, that makes some sort of sense. But when you're buying, you know, white walls for your 85 Buick, that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's happening.
All right.
So what's going on in your life? Oh, but that's because people are clicking through our site when they shop on Amazon. So it helps us out.
Keep doing it is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I just dropped something.
Oh, no.
Okay. It's not important.
Was it your new album?
No. My new white walls.
So what's going on in your life?
Lots of things photography. Like I feel like for a number of weeks I've had little to say in the way of what I've been taking pictures of and whatnot, and I got lots of stuff.
Okay. We don't want to hear about it.
Ask me about it.
No, we don't want to hear about it. I want to hear about it. Let's start with the first one. What's the first one?
Well, the first one is kind of what happened to me on the way to do some photography.
Ooh.
Okay.
Is that like I fought bigger guys than you on the way to fights?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I had a very funny experience. You know how we say pack light, because when it comes to carrying photography gear, it's kind of, you know, it's a pain in the butt if you pack too much stuff.
Yes.
Well, I had the perfect example of what can go wrong when you pack too much stuff. Okay, so I had, you know, I wanted to take some photos. It was midday at Gary Point Park, beautiful sunshiny day, and I said to myself, I'm going to try out my studio light with my portable studio, flash battery power thingy. I'm going to take it to the beach midday, and I'm going to use this studio light to overpower the sun with a giant softbox and just see what happens. I haven't really used it in this scenario, and so I had the studio light, I had the battery, I had the giant softbox, I had my camera bag, You know, the kids and us and I and my wife were going to the beach, so we had lawn chairs, and so I'm carrying just a massive array of stuff. Okay, every arm, shoulder, everything's packing. You know, Gary Point is a prime kite flying location.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, I was walking, and these aren't just your average kites. These are massive.
These are your attack kites.
Yeah, these are like, you know, like the kite flying club kites where, you know, the kites are easily 10, 12 feet across, right? Mm-hmm. Like just massive kites. So anyway, so I'm walking on the pathway, the walkway to go to the beach or the part of the beach that I like, which is, you know, near that fishing monument thingy and just down past that. So I'm walking along the path, minding my own business with all of this gear packed around me. And without me knowing, a kite swoops down from above and literally lands right around me. So it's kind of like a V-shaped string setup that goes to the top of this giant kite.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy crash landed it on me. And now he's an older gentleman who is on the impatient side, let's call it. And he starts yanking on this kite, which is now fully wrapped around me. And I have at least, I'm packing at least 25, 30 pounds of just random stuff on every arm. And I'm like, I can't drop the stuff. I'm now like, I feel like in a cartoon, like this thing is just raveled around me in every direction. He's yanking on it, and he's probably a good, I don't know, I'm going to say 50 meters away, because again, it's a long kite string. And I'm like, I'm to my wife, I'm like, Lise, help me. Like, what do I do here, right? Mm-hmm. And the guy is yelling from 50 meters away, let go. and I'm like, I don't know what to do here. I feel like it's like a tripwire and he's just going to yank it. I'm going to fall on my face. But he's pulling on this thing. My wife is trying to unravel me. It was the most surreal. Like, it would have been a great, I wish somebody had it like on their camera phone and just saw what happened.
If only somebody had a camera at that point.
Well, from the time that the kite crash landed on me to the time we got it off was maybe a minute. But it was a minute of like emotional turmoil. Like, I wanted to be so mad, but it was so like outrageous, and I found the humor in it myself, but I at the same time wish I had a pair of scissors and I could have just cut that guy's kite string.
Uh-huh.
So I got it untangled, and I was completely the bigger man. This is how I know I've arrived and I've changed and I've matured. Is a 10-year younger me would have lost his ever-loving mind at this guy.
Yes.
And I didn't. I didn't say anything. I didn't say, what the heck are you doing? Why don't you fly the kites out in the infield where everybody else in the universe is flying them?
Wait.
Right on the pathway.
I had assumed that he was. It was just so long.
No. He was well out of the jurisdiction of the normal kite flyers. And I'm feeling like he wasn't necessarily playing a full deck here either.
Right.
So I just chose to just kind of take the high road and move along, and that was it. And my wife afterwards was like so impressed because I didn't lose my mind. And she was like, I can't believe you wow, didn't lose it on that guy, right? So
yes.
So there you have it. Why you might not want to pack every piece of photography equipment you own, because you never know.
Well, no, that's obvious. That's why I don't pack it. Yeah. Exactly.
So, anyways, that was one funny thing that happened to me photography related. In the photography end of things from that shoot, I did, you know, it does have a ton of power. I did just kind of test things out. Unfortunately, I put like an ND filter on my camera, and I was really hoping to get, you know, blue sky and nice exposure and overpower the sun and get everything I wanted. And it was so bright. This is something that everybody out there should pay more attention to. It was so bright, I could basically see nothing on my LCD.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping, like, I looked and I could tell that from my histogram, my exposure was fine. It was well within the limits. But when I got home, even with the ND filter on and the ISO and everything, I had my shutter speed exactly where I wanted, and I thought I was still going to have blue sky. I was wrong, and I had still lost the sky. Even though everything in the foreground was exposed properly, and the logs and all that, I lost the blue sky. So I was very upset because I was keen on getting that blue sky, and that's why I brought the ND filter and everything else. But still, I managed to blow out the sky, and I was also trying to get fancy and shoot it like, you know, an F4 so that I could have a really, really shallow depth of field, do it in midday, keep the blue sky. Very difficult task to pull off when you can't really make out colors on your LCD.
And while you're dodging kites.
And of course, the beach brings out just random guys who like to talk to you when they see you setting up equipment. So I was so trying to get this setup done so I didn't have to talk to a random guy who just loved telling me everything about his life because he happened to have his bike and his sandwich on a log nearby that I didn't see when I set things up. So Yeah. So just a FYI, not a great thing to try to carry on a full conversation while you're trying to set things up. Because, I mean, my move was get everything ready, just run the family in, take a couple of shots and get everybody out so we can go back to family fun time. And I did that, except for what I missed was why I went there in the first place, which is to get a good photo.
But you learned something.
I learned something. Yeah, I learned a lot of things that day. So, what I was curious about was that, okay, so if the foreground exposure is all right, like everything was right in the foreground, shouldn't I have been able to keep some of the blue background? Like, I didn't blow out any foreground.
It depends. I mean, it could be really, really bright and like a slight haze in the air, and that's just going to cause the sky to not be blue anymore. I mean, it's also, I also find, you know, different times of the year, it depends what's going on. I don't have a scientific answer for you. You got to call Don for that, and he can dispute everything I just said. But it could have been just that bright.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, and I don't know. Like, again, I was wearing sunglasses. It was extremely bright, and so there were so many variables going on. I was looking at my camera through sunglasses. The camera itself has an ND filter. Yeah, no. When I set it up, I think I might have checked it once without, but no, it was bright. Everything was bright, so I was wearing sunglasses as well. But now I flipped them up for the picture. But I'm sure when I was setting everything up that I was wearing sunglasses the whole time, which again isn't a typical move, but that was just the time of day. I would never really choose to do this kind of thing, but the whole task was, can I do it? Keep everything the way I want it? If this situation presented itself, could I overcome it with my big giant speed light? And I think the answer is yes, but I failed on this occasion.
Right. My one tip is obviously don't wear sunglasses. I don't even wear sunglasses like 15 to 20 minutes before I'm going to shoot something on the way somewhere.
Just because you feel like it's going to give you misinformation?
It is. I do feel that way. I mean, I'm already, you know, at a disadvantage because of the colorblind thing as it is, so I don't like to do it. But there was this baseball player a long time ago, a guy named, you might never have heard of him, Ted Williams.
Yeah.
You've heard of him?
Never heard of him. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, his deal was,
is he related to Bernie?
He is Bernie, correct.
Yeah.
So his deal was when he's at the plate and let's say a cloud came over and, you know, like over the sun, you know, because they played day games typically back then. So if, you know, a cloud, you know, just even like a simple cloud, like a small cloud just kind of came in front of the sun, he'd call time out and give his eyes just a second to readjust.
Okay.
Because your eyes are basically adjusting to the current light situation. If that changes, your eyes need a minute.
Right.
And so he would do that when he would hit. And so I took that approach to photography, knowing that, my eyes are going to be, you know, if you sit in a dark room for a long time, what happens to your pupils?
They dilate.
There you go. So now if you walk out into a, you know, a sunny room or outside in the sun, now all of a sudden everything's a little too bright. You're going to squint. You're not going to see things how you would like to see them.
Right.
For a minute.
Yeah, no, I think there's probably some truth to that for sure. So yeah, so my I'm gonna have to try to redo that because wasn't ultimately thrilled with the result. But yeah, too distracted in the setup, too quick with everything, still rattled from the whole kite flying incident. It was not to be on that day. But I did learn something. Pack light and don't talk to strangers.
Don't talk. But see, the thing is this is the big takeaway that you obviously knew, is that if you see a guy on a bike who puts a sandwich on a log, just steer clear of him.
Yeah.
That's a red flag.
The other thing that I think partly is I haven't done as much lighting lately, and especially not in this kind of direct sunlight, is I was almost just too cocky. Like, I thought in my head, okay, these settings, like, I didn't even feel like I had to check anything. I thought, you know, this ISO with the ND filter on, that when the shutter speed's 180 at an f5, like, I'm going to be all dialed in, and just took one shot and only looked at the histogram because I couldn't really tell with how bright it was on the LCD what I was seeing. I was a little cocky. I should have spent more time just with a test shot or two with the background without any of the lights, just to make sure that the background looked blue. I feel like I should have been able to take another 8 seconds to do that, and then I wouldn't have messed up. But part of it was just I can do this basically with my eyes closed, and apparently I can't.
Right. Yeah, and the LCD screen is really tough in this scenario. I've had just yesterday I shot some stuff at my kids in the playground, big surprise, and it was very sunny, and so I thought, oh man, even though I'm shooting them in open shade, I'm standing in the sun.
Right.
So I'm looking at the LCD thinking, oh, this is going to be terrible, and then get back, you know, to the computer and find out this is mildly terrible only. Right. No, it was actually exposed perfectly, but I couldn't tell.
You can't tell. Yeah.
There's so much going on. You see your own reflection, you know, on the LCD screen, and that just, first of all, I'm captivated, and I just kind of wander off and stare at myself for a while.
Right.
And once that's done, tough times. That's why we don't shoot during those times. One of the many reasons.
Yeah. Because it's tough. It just confirmed that is this is just it's it can be done. But it's just a sucky time to do this. It's just, you know, and that's why, you know, you get some overcast and great, go out in the middle of the day because you don't need any of this extra stuff, right? I would have been able to dodge that kite in a heartbeat if I didn't have all that gear strapped to my back. Yeah. Right. I had another situation here too, just while I'm thinking about this. This is completely going in a different direction, but it's one of those things that drives me crazy. I'm sure this would have driven you crazy, but I've been taking the camera out to Jack's baseball lately, right? So it's mm-hmm. T-ball. They go out. The kids just have a blast. I like to take some action shots. I'm one of the coaches, but it's you know, all it's appreciated from everybody. So I take a few minutes when the light's good, and I just, you know, get in, like, I'm on the field, like we're right out on the field with the kids, kind of, you know, directing them where they should be and whatnot. And so I can get some great sort of angles because essentially I'm right on the field with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, so there was another dad from one of the other teams there that I noticed who was also, you know, taking some photos, and he had a really nice camera. So I don't know if it was a 5D2 or a 5D3, but he had a very nice camera with an L lens. I could tell, identify those quite easily. So he had a very expensive setup. Let's just say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was taking a few photos, and then, so his kid's team, he's not one of the coaches, he was just on the sidelines. His kid's team goes from being at bat to out in the field. So our kids were also sharing the same dugout or the same bench where they're going to sit on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next, so all our kids come to sit down. Next thing I notice is right in the middle of the player's bench is his camera, just sitting willy-nilly in the center of the player's bench. Now, he's probably 10 or 15 feet away, looking right at the kids and his camera. A kid on our team sits next to it. One kid sits right on it. And I quickly was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I said to the guy, because I realized, you know, it was his camera. I said, you might want to come grab this, right? And he's like, oh, it wasn't on his shoulder. He was with his wife. Wasn't on her shoulder, on the player's bench while children sat on it. No lens cap. You know, it's all dusty and everything around there. It saddened me. It was a moment where I felt like he didn't deserve to have that camera back. If he was my kid, there would have been some kind of penalty there.
I just threw up in my mouth.
It was unbelievable. I could not fathom how that could happen. Literally, kids sat on it.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable now.
I know, and again, this is not made up. This literally was. Okay, at some point, you take the camera off your shoulder, are tired of shooting. How does it sit on the player's bench? Like, how does that get to be, I'm going to rest it here?
That's not a thing. No. Where was the strap in all this?
Well, the strap is just lying over the player's bench, like the, you know, but that was the least of his problems.
Right. No, I don't know why I focus on that a little bit. That, to me, that would just be the icing on the cake, you know, where the strap would be kind of hanging over the edge where someone could catch it with his foot.
I was watching this and I saw it and I saw a kid sitting down. I just was waiting for him to jump up and be like, oh, no. It never happened. He watched the whole thing, did not say a word. And then when a kid literally sat on the edge of it, I like jumped into action and was like, no. And then handed it back to him.
The frustrating part for me is these are the guys who never get hit by kites.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm sure that's never happened.
Jeez.
Lucky. But anyways, just give your head a shake, people. I hope if you're listening to this podcast, you would never do that. Mm-hmm. We would probably shame you on this podcast if you did.
Yes. You know what would be ironic is if he just randomly he stumbled across this podcast because he's a fan of German baseball.
Right.
And found out about it from the color commentary on last week's game. That would be ironic.
Yeah.
What a small world, he'd be saying to himself.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Photo challenge.
Yes.
Because when you know, your what's going on was, did you shoot anything interesting?
For me, I told you.
I know. For me, there's nothing going on. I don't know if I shot anything interesting. If I did, we'll talk about it next week.
Okay, great.
Photo challenge from last week was Magic Hour.
Yes.
Okay. We didn't have one.
Oh, no.
We didn't have an actual Magic Hour in the 2 weeks that we had. We recorded 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I got cocky and said, of course we'll do Magic Hour. It's been nothing but Magic Hour here. So, sure, let's do it. And then, no, it just didn't happen. Every single night. I brought my camera with me everywhere I went. But I did get some actual photographs.
Okay.
So
let's go with you first.
Okay, here's the one you can see, like there's the road and the church and whatnot in the sky.
Is that the first one, Alan? The one's just Alan?
Yes.
Pure Alan?
That's the one.
Okay.
That's the one I've chosen. I just kind of like the composition. So that's going to be my Magic Hour. This is basically the sun has just peaked behind the foothills, behind me and to the left. Mm-hmm. And the sky would be up all golden if it wasn't all covered in the clouds. But we kind of feel that golden light, on the, I don't know what you call those flowers in English.
I don't know.
The rapsol.
Sure.
Rapeseed plants in English. So this is it. Boom. Done.
Okay.
No, now it's your turn. Run with it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you want me to comment on it? I got no comment.
No.
This is not my cup of tea. Not that your photo is anything wrong. This kind of photo isn't my cup of tea.
No,
I would never take a photo like this. Not, I just mean like a landscape photo of a town. Like it just would never occur to me. So this photo is perfectly pleasing, but I have no critique of it because I don't really understand photos in this way. Like I understand portrait photos and I know what I like and don't like about them, but this kind of photo, it's like, I feel like I'm speaking a different language when it comes to, you know, a landscape photo like this. So I don't know what's good, what isn't. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what I like and don't like because I tend to just move on. I never look at landscape photos with a critical eye. So I see this and I like, oh, I like the yellow. The yellow pops out. That's kind of, and that's where it ends for me.
Well, that's what I had in mind. That's what, because I was riding my bike, you know, home from baseball, and this is where I ride my bike, and this is the time of year I really like the yellow flowers, because yeah. they really pop out against the rest of the landscape. So I actually included another one that I like just because I kind of like how the sharp edge of the flowers ends. On the field. Like, you see the next photo I was talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I kind of like how it just basically takes up the one, you know, the bottom left corner exactly yeah. of the image. Yeah. Again, I'm not going to hang this on my wall.
Yeah, but it's neat. Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, eye-catching and then plays against the blue skies. And so this was taken about 8 seconds after the other one. Yeah. But this just to prove to you that I do know what Magic Hour is... I did snap an awkward-looking American Gothic-looking photo of two of my teammates raking the field in the 2 minutes that we actually did have something resembling Magic Hour.
Okay. So there, yeah, that looks like Magic Hour.
Yeah. Again, that was, we legitimately had a two-minute window where the sun popped through some clouds at that time of day, and that was it. And so we happened to be raking the field at the time. And so...
Yeah, they look thrilled.
They did put that on purpose because the guy on the left is a bit of an egghead, and he did say, "Hey, let's do American Gothic."
Oh,
I said, "Oh yeah," I thought that was pretty funny, actually, considering. Okay. So there you go. This was just at the end of practice, fixing our rain-soaked field. So there you go. That's Magic Hour. I mean, mine. I had something else in mind entirely, using those flowers and shooting into the sunset and. And that, so that'll have to wait for another day.
Okay.
Let's have a look at yours.
I did one into the sun and then one with my back to the sun. So the one of my daughter on her bike was right in the last probably 3 minutes of Magic Hour. So there was just kind of a... there's trees and there's shadows cast all around, but you can see she's kind of, I positioned her right in that light, that Magic Hour light as it comes through and around the trees. So there's sort of, almost like a spotlight on her. So I really like mm-hmm. it. And in the background, it all gets much darker. So that was one I took. And then I took another one, with my daughter and a friend, playing on the slide. And I basically got myself into an angle where I could see the sun just beside the kids and took a photo into the sun. And you see, obviously, the colors get more washed out. And obviously, there's a bunch of bright highlights around their hair and some backlighting there because of how low the sun is. So, yeah, so I did one in towards the sun and then one with my back to the sun.
And which one do you like better?
Tough to say. I like them both for different reasons. Totally different mood to shooting with your back to the sun versus into the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I like the bike probably better.
As do I. I mean, this is much nicer colors.
Definitely get the pop of the colors. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the fall. I love the spotlight effect. I love whoever's standing with you in the shadow on the bottom left-hand side.
Well, there's just people at the playground. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tell them to get out.
Yeah. I was so thrilled that I actually could get a crop where I didn't have people in it because there's kids just to the right. There's people standing, adults to the left. So I was over the moon because this is right after baseball. So all the kids basically head to the playground.
Uh-huh.
And so you don't get a shot where there's nobody in the background. So I was happy to get this. But yeah, there are shadows of people around.
And she's wearing her kite helmet, which is good.
She's got her full protection. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do like this because I also like the way that the light hits the climbing wall.
Yes.
And that sort of dappled
effect.
That's
coming through trees. Yeah, it's coming through trees.
Which,
yeah.
P.S., you did not know this. That is the photo challenge for next week, is that dappled light. So there you go. You're one step
dappled.
Ahead. One step ahead yet again.
Always.
The other photo I also like, I think you will like it better if you take the same photo in August.
Okay.
I think, and again, this is me, I don't think I'm wrong. Again, Don will argue with me. I feel like the light on your daughter and her friend will be a lot more orange, a lot warmer okay. light. Like right now in the beginning of May, this feels kind of like a cool,
yeah, like a cool definitely. Feeling and the shadows it. Are very cool. Yeah.
And even if you warm it up, then the, like the background where the, like the sun is shining on that tree or whatever it is, it'll be too warm. Like the skin tones won't look natural. But whereas if you do this in sort of later, mid to late August, I find that everything warms up in the shadows and you get a much nicer feeling. So okay. Same photo, the exact same photo and nothing that you did, just a time shift.
Okay.
So there you go.
I will try to retake this exactly in 3 months from now.
Yes. Mark it on your calendar. This week's topic, we're going into part two with Amber Hughes. About how to hire. Well, a couple weeks ago, we talked about how to hire a wedding photographer. Well, this is how to feed a wedding photographer.
How to feed one?
Well, it's how to care and feed for it, but that's a long title.
Okay.
But it's one of the things that well, we talk about it in the interview. But one of the things that you know always kind of didn't. I wouldn't say rub me the wrong way, but I could see a real vacuum. Was how people treated their wedding photographer once they'd hired them. Like, there's certain little things that you can do to maximize the quality of your photos that they're going to take. So you want to put them in a great position to take great photos that you hired them to take.
Okay.
So it's not as simple as you think. So without further ado, let's hear from Amber. It's a hello, Amber. I never know how to start these. Because every time it's just, hello, here we are. I've already intro'd you with Adam.
Yeah.
And so now here we are. So as you can tell, we're back with Amber Hughes. Hello, Amber.
Hello.
Amber, you know from, wedding photographer on the internet, and a couple episodes ago, she was on the show.
That's me.
That's her. So, last episode, we talked about how to find a photographer. So now you've got them. Now the big day is here. How do you feed your photographer? No, wait. That comes at the end.
Also very important, but how do you... the care and maintenance of your photographer.
The care and maintenance. They're not a pet rock. You have They're to not, do better than that.
No, you need to feed them info and get info back.
Right. Very so important. We talked last time. We got to the end. We got to, deposit. And you go with a third, which I think is actually relatively typical. I say typical, let me say relatively popular, because...
Yeah, you see it fairly often. I do see people who do 50%, mm-hmm. which I think is a lot of money.
Right.
That's why I do thirds. And then some people do just a retainer fee, like $1,000, and then the rest later.
Gotcha. So you got that deposit down. Now, engagement photos?
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. I do that.
You want that? Let's go the other way with it. Because as we talked last week, this is kind of the reverse side of it. What would you do if you were hiring a wedding photographer now? So if you were getting married now, would you want engagement photos?
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that I get a lot of people inquiring with me and saying, you know what, we don't really want the engagement photos. Can we take that out? And the reason I always say to do them, because the thing that people are worried about is it feeling kind of cheesy to do this portrait session. Mm-hmm. But it's honestly only partly about the photos.
Is it ever the women who ask to have it taken out, or is it the guys?
Oh, yeah. No, both sides.
Okay.
And it's actually mostly, I think, about getting to know each other with a camera in the mix. It's really important for the photographer so they can get to know who you are. That's where I get to know more about my clients and their silly stories and that sort of thing. More about their background. I get to know what makes them more comfortable, what things they're not comfortable doing. Sometimes clients tell me, we really don't like doing poses where we're kind of cuddling and have our eyes closed. We're not really like that. And that's something I might not know unless I did that engagement session with them.
Okay.
And then it also, for my clients, it gives them a chance to get to know who I am a bit better, what my personality is even more when I'm shooting. Because, you get to know my personality during a meeting, but that's only 30 minutes. Whereas when you shoot with me for 2 hours, you get a way better idea of how this is actually going to feel on the wedding day. and just, you know, my style, and you get more relaxed with, okay, Amber's got this under control. You know, she's good at making us feel relaxed, keeping us laughing or what have you. And then you get to see the photos and you get a really good chance to see, wow, we actually look really good. And I really like this, and this is going to be awesome.
Right. Okay. Now, how far in advance do you do the engagement photos?
Well, it really depends, again, on the clients. I say if you're booking a year out, it's really nice because you have a full array of the seasons to choose from. Mm-hmm. I say usually you want to do it at least 4 months out. You can do it 2 months out. That's getting a little bit squeezed, because if you want to do anything like get prints or anything for your sign-in table, you want to give yourself enough time to be able to organize and have that done. Mm-hmm. So I would say minimum 4 months before.
So you get your wedding photo, your engagement photos done. Now, leading up to the day, pre-wedding contact, do you talk to the clients, talk to you in advance?
Oh, yeah. A lot. Usually it's mostly by email. I mean, if sometimes my clients want to meet in person to talk about things, if they're more comfortable with that, totally no problem. It's better if it's during the quiet season, of course. It mm-hmm. will be a little bit harder to get, just find a date that works otherwise. But I really encourage my clients to email me or phone me about anything that they need. Because I want to be able to be involved and help with anything photo related as much as I can, so that I can make sure on my end that things are set up the way that they need to be as well. And so I want people to come to me with their questions and concerns and thoughts about stuff. Typically my clients will, you know, email me and just want to know about locations, or, you know, we were thinking about maybe doing the portraits around this time of day. What do you think of that? How is it for light? Just stuff like that. So
do they ever ask you scheduling questions?
Oh, all the time.
This is something if you're looking, if you've hired a photographer and you trust them, definitely ask them, because you've been to many, many weddings.
So many.
you know what works, you know what doesn't. You know what works in the scope of an actual wedding, mm-hmm. let alone what's going to work in the wedding photos.
Absolutely. I'm not taking anything away from wedding planners at all. They are amazing, but we're almost like wedding planner light, in lieu of a wedding planner. We really do help with a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I encourage that.
There's a lot of wedding planners do, though, so.
No, of course. And they're all big fans of the show, so don't want to step on their toes.
No, and they're amazing. I honestly, if there's one thing I can encourage, is for people to at least get a day of coordinator, if not a wedding planner. It's so good, but that's a whole other thing.
We'll get the photographer first, and then, if you can afford it. That's all I'm ever saying.
Yeah, it is expensive. Yeah. I will definitely give you that.
but I had a lot of people ask, you know, say, hey, what about, you know, or when my friends got married, I had been to a lot of weddings, and I would tell them, okay, here's the typical layout. Do this, this, then this. Cut the cake here. Whatever it is, what these little things that are kind of throwaway things on a day can all line up nicely. So
exactly.
Ask your photographer questions, and if he or she doesn't know, that could be a red flag. Maybe you should ask that early on in your first meeting before you hire.
Absolutely.
Now, so you've hired a photographer, you've met with them before the wedding. Do you give them a list of photos that you want?
Well, here's the thing about lists of photos.
Okay, just be honest.
It depends on the list. Let me explain about that. So you know how you see in those wedding magazines, 20 must-have photos, and it's all sorts of photos that they think, you know, you need to tell your photographer, like a photo of your dress hanging. The thing is that every photographer takes that photo.
Yes.
And you really don't, if you see it in their portfolio consistently, if it's one of those things that a photo of you cutting the cake, it's one of those things they're going to get. And you don't need to be stressing your photographer out with a list of things that they will be getting anyways, with them looking at it and worrying, okay, did I get the signature cocktail? Because the problem with those lists is you start focusing on the list so much that you stop seeing what's happening candidly. Because you're running around trying to get those things, and it's stuff that we'll get anyways. But because you've made a special point of the list, it kind of heightens the worry about it, if you know what I mean.
So if someone's going to give me a list, my advice to them, now the client is normally always right, but not really. But I would tell them, give me a list with no more than three items on it. That just three. All needs three. The rest, I'm going to get exactly what you want and what happens exactly. And what you don't know. But if there is something like the signature cocktail, then perhaps put that on the list.
Well, what I tell people is there anything unusual or important, any important details that you really want to make sure that I capture?
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, it might be, well, we made all the signs on the sign-in table and we really want to make sure you get photos of that or something like that. I would be getting the sign-in table anyways, but just to make sure that I individually get all those signs, no right. problem. But telling your photographer that you want certain photos, this is something that's been a real issue lately is people sending Pinterest boards with all the portraits that they want to have.
Uh-huh.
And the problem with that is you've hired a photographer because you love their style, and every wedding that they're going to do is going to be unique and candid and unique and organic in their own style. And you kill the creativity of your photographer by making them just do a list of, you know, okay, now we're going to do this one with the balloons, and now we're going to do, you know, instead of having them create new art for you.
Okay, but as a corollary to that, I don't want a list of photos to take. What I do want a copy of the schedule.
Oh, heck yeah.
Ahead of time, so that I can be prepared. I can go, okay, there are balloons going to happen here. I will mm-hmm. be prepared for this, 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 and this.
Oh, yeah. You absolutely want to make sure that they get a schedule of the day. That's 100%. But if you love the style of your photographer, you should allow them, you know, you can tell them things like, I really want to make sure you get a photo of my dad seeing my dress for the first time. That's no problem.
Still.
But saying, I want it to look exactly like this.
Sure.
That is a problem. So, like I said, it depends on the list. But I think it's good to just, you know, be able to trust your photographer and give them some guidelines of what is really important to you, but not tell them, you know, cinch them in with, this is exactly the way I want you to do it.
So what I'm saying is, on the back of the schedule, you give them, jot down three notes and you're done.
Yeah.
You'll be very happy with what the photographer does. Okay, on the day, here we are, the day of the wedding. Now, I'm typically, you probably go and shoot the getting ready part.
Yes, usually.
Okay. Usually. Does it ever happen that you don't?
Occasionally. It depends on the client. Some clients just don't really want that part of the day.
Does that confuse you? I've had it happen to me, and I get very confused.
I do find it a little confusing, because I don't know. I personally really love that portion of the day, and I think it's really exciting, and it's that last moment before things change.
I like Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it's like Christmas Eve. Yeah. And I look back on the few meager photos I have from my wedding, and I do have a couple from getting ready, and I don't know, there's just something about, I look nervous in the photos, and that makes me smile, knowing how nervous I was, and seeing me with my mom and my sister, and you know, it's that last moment before I was actually married, mm-hmm. which I think is really special.
Yeah, so if you are planning on not having your photographer show up, rethink that. I think, and people, for some reason, I don't know why, they think nothing goes on. There's a lot of little things that happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that you will miss. Those are the things that you do miss. You'll probably remember cutting the cake.
Yeah.
But you won't remember. But
you might not remember your mom crying as your friend was helping you put your shoes on.
There you go. So
it's those little things.
Okay, so now we get to the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need any direction here? Like what would you expect from the client?
For the ceremony, usually, and I'll just say this, I'm putting this out there for anyone who wants to be a wedding photographer. All of this stuff that we're going over, I usually send out a questionnaire about a month before the wedding, that goes over all of these details so that I have it in all in one handy spot. And it gets them thinking about these things too. And for the ceremony, what I really want to know is if there's any restrictions that I need to know about at the ceremony, if there's anyone I need to speak to specifically before the ceremony starts. Typically, I introduce myself to whoever the officiant is anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But just to know ahead of time, do I need to be contacting them the week before the wedding to hash out these details? And that's something that a professional would do versus someone who is flying by the seat of their pants.
Yeah.
But, you know, some I've been heavily restricted at different venues. And this is something to know too, when you're planning your wedding, is because it might change how you are envisioning your wedding will be captured. Some venues, you're not allowed to go past the first pew. You're not allowed to use flashes. You're not allowed to go up in the balcony. And you might really want that photo. And, you know, just so you know ahead of time for your own expectations that you're not going to get that just based on what your venue is saying mm-hmm. is allowed. So you don't necessarily have to figure out where your photography is going to stand. That's something that we do. That's part of our professional opinion. Mm-hmm. typically, one of us will be in one spot and the other one will be in the opposite spot so that we're getting both things at the same time. For instance, the bride's face versus the groom's face or, you know, that sort of thing. But really it's finding out what your officiant and your ceremony site, what their rules are, and then passing off that info to your photographer so they can then, figure out what their contingency plan is and how they're going to deal with it.
And when you get all lined up and set to shoot the bride, and then for some reason they switch sides.
Oh yeah. I don't know what that's all about.
I've had that happen more often than I care to say, and that's always
yeah. You're all set to go, and then for some reason it's what's happening?
Yeah.
That's not where it is.
Or wait a second, was the groom's back always that big?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, that's no fun. But okay, so you've shot the ceremony. We've moved outside. Now we're gonna do the portraits. Like, what do we know about? Jeez, how do I put this? What do you expect from the photographer when it comes to taking the portraits?
Do you mean where to go or?
Okay. Well, first off, like, should the photographer be self-sufficient or should they be relying on somebody else? Like specifically, here's the thing: we went outside, we shot all the the basic family stuff that is kind of mostly academic, I find. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to go off and go to different locations. And shoot the bridal parties and the bride and groom in the portrait stuff. Do you want a ride or are you driving? That's my specific question.
That really depends on where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
I typically, if we're not going anywhere too busy, I'll drive on my own. And I do enjoy being in the limo. Don't get me wrong. It's nice. For instance, when you're going to a busy location to just be able to arrive at the same time as your bride and groom,
mm-hmm.
And not have everybody trying to find parking and what have you. But one of the reasons I do like to drive on my own is I can typically get there quicker than them. So I'm ready. I'm fresh. I've had a chance to do that last 5 minute scout before they get there. Really know, okay, I really want to start over here. And then we're going to, I didn't see that yet. I'm going to move over to that next. And I mean, I've always scouted beforehand, but it just gives me, gets me in the zone for that area.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way because when I shot video, see, typically my video was 100% documentary. So
right.
I would never dictate what was going on. I would just be invisible. So for me, it didn't matter. I didn't have to pre-scout. Like, that was the photographer's job.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I always wanted to ride in the car simply for parking because of all the things I would miss.
Parking can be awful.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason I do like having my own vehicle is then, well, everybody's getting into the limo, I can quickly jump in my car and I can get out of there before them. And I can get to the reception site. Usually that's my time when I can get there a little bit early, just before they arrive, so that I can get some photos before everyone floods into the reception room, get the detail photos. It also gives me a chance to get ready, get everything set up, have a breather for 2 minutes before they do their entrance and we go straight into everything to do with the reception. So that's another reason why I enjoy having my vehicle. But if we're going to, Granville Island or what have you, and it's a really, high August date, then I would probably jump in the limo with them because it's almost impossible to find parking.
Yes. The one I got burned on was the Lionsgate Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Going from North Van into Vancouver, and of course, the bridal limo pulled right up, and go ahead, it's your wedding. But the photographer, no one cared about, so I was a good 45 minutes, an hour behind them.
Oh, brutal!
Yeah, they understood it. They recognized, that was the nature of it. That wasn't my fault.
I had one occasion where I was supposed to be in the limo with the bride and groom, with the bride after her getting ready to go to the ceremony site. And for whatever reason, she said, you can be in the limo with us. And then I get there, so I left my car behind. And for whatever reason, it had been changed to we're going in a series of cabs. And they all got in a cab, and I got in a cab, and my cab went over the Burrard Street Bridge and got stuck in traffic. And I almost missed the ceremony because of that. And that sort of thing just makes me feel queasy. So I really like to hash out, absolutely for sure, will I be with you or am I taking my own vehicle?
Yes.
Because ever since that one occasion, I got there in time, but oh, that was a very tense drive for me.
And oh, that's interesting. So if you, you know, as the client, you know, how early do you expect your photographer to be at, you know, at various places?
Well, you know, I typically show up 15 to half an hour before I'm supposed to start shooting in the morning, just so that I can be ready and seamlessly go into the coverage. I would say you would want your photographer to show up at least 15 minutes before the ceremony, at least 15 minutes before you get there, just to make sure that they're, you know, again, they've had a chance to look at the light. They know where they're going to stand. They've had a chance to say hi to the second shooter who's been with the guys all morning. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be able to pad in a little bit of time like that for them, because we can't just go from one thing to the next without having a chance to really assess the situation.
Right. And let me tell you from experience that that 15 minutes is the fastest 15 minutes of your life.
Oh, yeah. It goes by real quick.
Yeah. When you're trying to scout a couple locations for the light, and oh, here, they're here. Here we go.
Oh, and this is happening now.
Yeah. All of a sudden you hear the organ. Yeah. No, that's happened before. Oh, boy. I better get going. Now, so we're back to doing the portrait session. How many non-essential wedding guests do you want at that portrait session?
Nobody. You only want to have the bridal party, and that's it.
And this happens so much, where I've seen it happen, where they bring, you know, oh yeah, Aunt Jenny is going to bring you know, yeah, her 5 and 7 year old.
Yeah, no,
because they want to see.
They can see the photos later.
You can tell them how fun it was. Take them somewhere else.
And they can dance at the reception together. They'll have a wonderful time. But no, it's, you know, and I think too, like, I try to really prep my clients with this info beforehand that really we don't want anyone but the bridal party, you know, just to make it more efficient so that we can get the variety that you want and you expect from my work that you see on my website. Mm-hmm. And just make sure that they really understand what's going to be the best. And I also try to make sure, and this is actually in my contract, that they understand that people aren't supposed to be following me around and taking the same shot over my shoulder. That's, you know, I absolutely have no problem with your Uncle Gary wanting to grab his own photos during the ceremony, provided that he understands that, or, you know, get his own portrait of you, but provided he understands that he can't be getting in my way and taking the exact same shot as mine that I've taken the time to set up, and he's just, you know, happens to be lucky enough to be there to you know, scavenge.
In the contract, that never occurred to me.
In the contract, absolutely.
Uncle Gary.
That way, it's a great way for you to be able to discuss it with them, because when you're going over the contract details, I pause and I talk to them about that. And then that way, you know, that they understand, that this is something that's very serious.
So when you're shooting the portrait session, now that can last anywhere from, I'll say, like an hour to 2 hours. How long do they typically last?
Typically in Vancouver, they're usually about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Usually clients want to go to more than one location, and that's why, it gives you the time at each location. And usually it's not, you know, we just go to this one location and we spend an hour with just the mountains in the background. It's like you go to the location and work the variety within that location. So you might, you know, go by the water, go into the trees, that sort of thing. But usually it's about 2 hours, I find.
So in that time, if, you know, again, you're getting married, do you bring water and snacks for your photographer?
Typically people don't. I usually bring my own snacks for that time. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they do. I even had a bride have sushi delivered to the limo. I couldn't believe that happened. It was amazing.
Wow.
I was all about that one. but, you know, it depends. I would say, though, absolutely make sure that if you're the bride and groom, make sure you have water and snacks for yourself. It's, yes, a long time since breakfast. There's a lot going on. You usually haven't been able to eat that much. And it's just really important to keep your strength up.
So now we get to the reception. and everything that goes on, but more, you know what to do photography wise. But here's the big question. Does the bride and groom feed you?
100%. I say, like, and again, this is in my contract. But if my bride and groom want me to be there for 8 hours or more, mm-hmm. or if they have my coverage spanning the reception, then a meal is to either be provided or time for us to leave and go get our own meal is to be expected. It is actually legally, you are supposed to get a little bit of a break if you've been working a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. So that is something to keep in mind. If you were working an 8 hour day, you'd expect to have a lunch break, and we typically don't get one.
True.
But for eating, it's better if we have a chance to eat with everybody, and don't have to wander off and get our own food.
But again, in your shoes, let's say you're hiring somebody, are you going to have them fed at the place?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And think about, I mean, again, we haven't had a break all day. Usually I've been shooting for at least 6 hours by the time I get to the reception site, 4 to 6 hours, depending. In the hot sun, I've been carrying lots of heavy gear. I haven't had a moment where I've had even a chance to sit down. We really put ourselves to the max, in terms of what we can handle to be able to get these photos for you. And I think that providing your photographer with a hot meal after all of that, instead of, you know, a mushed sandwich that they happen to have in a cooler in their car, is really, you know, I would take that over a tip or anything any day.
And forget the fact that it's the least you can do. It is such a tiny investment for what you're going to get from the photographer.
Absolutely. And honestly, that food revives us, and then we're able to keep making that magic happen for the rest of the reception.
Where are you going to sit your photographer?
Well, this is something that I actually feel very passionately about. I actually do like to be sat with the guests, or at a vendor table that is in the main dining room, within all the guest tables, something preferably closer to where the speeches are going to be happening. And the reason for this is that it's easier for me to get guests. I can get more candid photos if I'm seated. I don't always just sit there and take photos, obviously, but I do take some photos from the table, and I find that people don't notice me as much, and I get more candid stuff. It's also easier for me to get up and get to the speeches or the bride and groom kissing or anything like that that's happening, if I'm not seated somewhere far away.
So just to backtrack a little bit, when people ask you about scheduling and stuff like that, if they say to you, hey, listen, we're going to have the speeches during dinner.
Yeah.
You green light that?
That's absolutely no problem.
Okay. See, I go the other way. Now, this is the video part of me, because the audio is terrible. Yeah. And so for me, I always tell them, no, have them separate. I know it takes longer, have them separate, but just because...
Well, I don't mind it, because honestly, when people are eating, it's a hard time to be shooting.
Yes.
Because nobody wants a photo of themselves with their fork coming to their face. It's not very attractive. Mm-hmm. So it gives us more to work, more to shoot, and it kind of gives you the most bang for your coverage buck. So I like it for that reason.
So photography wise, yes. Video wise, no.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah. And also, it's always, you know, it's always a surprise. They don't say, oh, hey, they never give me a heads up. Like, yeah, I want to talk now. It's always, they just start into it, you know. You're like, oh, what is that?
I usually have the reception scheduled beforehand, so I know what's going on.
Yes. Oh, but if they keep to it, you know, keep to that. If it'll be one speech, then dinner, then one speech, and then they never.
Then there's, you know, that uncle who gets up and just has to say something.
Yes. Yes. And so you end up recording the last half of that speech. So, okay, so you do like to be sit. Now, here's the big thing. When does the photographer eat?
Now, this is something that I think is extremely important, and not all the reception venues out there understand. A lot of your caterers or reception venues will tell you that they'll feed the photographer at the end.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
And they get combative about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. It's one of those things that it doesn't make any sense. And especially because, you know, the venues want good photos so that they can promote themselves too. You'd think that they'd understand. But what the best time to have your photographer eat is either immediately after the head table, or after the head table and you know, the very close family. I usually say after your close family, because I don't want them to feel like I'm being rude or anything. But it's best for me to be eating at the same time as the most important key people of the day, because then I'm done when you're done. And then I can be getting portraits of you. I can be getting the speeches. We can run out and get a photo at sunset. You know, we're done and finished and ready to work again by the time you are.
So you're not a prima donna then?
No, absolutely not. The reason that I want to do it is because I want to make sure that I can give my clients more.
Yes.
And that's exactly why I want to be ready and primed and absolutely, you know, and another reason too is, you know, I've had experiences where I've just gotten my meal and they go straight into speeches because I've been fed last.
Yeah.
And I only get a chance to have, you know, a forkful. And I come back and they've cleared my plate.
I think it's a universal, yeah.
Oh, it's very sad when that happens. So I haven't had my proper meal, which you've paid good money for. So I'm hungry. You've paid money that's been wasted. It's just not good for anyone.
Absolutely. And you are going to have to sort of endure the stink eye of a few of the guests.
Yeah.
It does happen.
I've had some guests make some comments like, oh, I didn't think you'd be getting a chance to eat or taking a break, eh, or whatever. And, yeah. You know, it's the truth is we're not really. Honestly, you should see how fast we eat our food. It's probably not good for us.
No, absolutely. It's 10 minutes is a long time.
It is. I'm shoveling the entire time. But. Yes.
Yeah, because you don't want to miss something. So like this is kind of what inspired this entire topic about how to feed your photographer, is because this is probably, besides all the big things that you normally know about, this is the one little thing that you could do during your day that will have the biggest impact on your photos.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to have a bunch of photos afterwards, the dancing, the cake cutting, and all that stuff. And like you said, the best part is you want your photographer to be done, ready to go at magic hour.
Absolutely. Then we can run out. We've got, you know, everybody's still eating. Nobody wants to be listening to whatever, or nothing's happening in that moment. We can go out and get those last few gorgeous photos for you.
Blam. Best investment you can make.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think that covers everything.
Yeah, there was a couple of more things I think you had.
Okay, it covers all of my things. Let's hear about your things.
Because you did send me some notes, right?
So,
but I do think it's really an important thing to think about is not have your photographer have access to the open bar.
Oh, I did write that. Yes.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I thought that would be something really important to talk about.
I think so. I wrote it down and thought, does it really happen?
It I've heard of it happening.
Oh no.
Where photographers decided to have a couple scotches or something and not been a good thing. I mean, as far as getting pop or something, oh yeah, heck yeah. Okay. I don't really drink pop, but if I'm at a wedding, it is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Seriously, yeah. I always have my wedding Coca-Cola. I have it like as soon as I get to the reception, it's reviving and amazing. No other time does it. It's like it has magical properties at that time. But in terms of drinking wine and whatnot, if they're done shooting, if you want to offer that to them, that's a different thing. But during the actual shooting, absolutely not.
Hopefully they would turn it down anyways.
You would think so.
I've been in that a lot of the weddings I shot because it was, you know, for it would be like say the third or fourth wedding I'd been at with that person, the bride, you know, the bride and groom. I've been at three weddings with already. So we're all pretty good friends. So in the limo, that, you know, they're all drinking beers and having a big party and hey, Al, come on. And I was like,
no.
You know what? At 11, I'm your guy, okay? But until then, I really have a job to do.
I usually laugh it off and say, well, you know, if you want all your photos to be slightly crooked from here on.
Exactly. So yeah, I can tell you I've never, ever, ever done that.
Yeah.
So, you're right. I put it down there and thought, no, that's not going to, no, who would do that? But I guess you're right. It must happen.
Well, I just thought I'd mention it because it's something that I feel really passionately, but I don't think that, you know, it's very professional on any job to be drinking. And there are some photographers out there. I've heard some horror stories of photographers getting drunk while they're shooting and it becoming a really uncomfortable situation for everybody. And I think it's one of those things that you should really think about.
Great. We'll end on that.
Sounds good.
Once again, Amber, where can people find your photos, your contact, your Instagram, all of that good stuff?
You can find me at amberhughes.ca. That's my portfolio and my blog. I also am on Facebook, facebook.com/amberhughesphotography. And I'm on Instagram as well, amberhughesphoto.
Great. And next time we'll talk a little bit about unplugged weddings.
Sounds good to me.
And we're back.
Yay.
What do you think, Adam?
I like to eat.
Well, you're going to shoot my sister's wedding, so I'm going to make sure she listens to this.
Okay.
Actually.
Well, let's make sure I eat something.
Yeah, and when to eat and what to eat. Well, you heard the interview, so no point in rehashing it.
Something
Yeah. Yeah, did. Okay. Will you? I think this is actually one that you might appreciate.
I will listen to it.
Because if you haven't done a lot of weddings, it's something you may not have thought about. It's these little things. Right. And Amber has done a lot of weddings, and I've done a fair number of weddings on the video side and seen the photographers and been treated the same way and think, wow, you're really handcuffing me on this, and you don't want to do that. So I urge you to share this with somebody who may be getting married, and and they can treat their wedding photographer as such. Topic, photo challenge.
You were hinting at one earlier.
Hinting, I came out and said it.
Right.
The last little while, I've really been thrilled with this dappled light that's coming that you can find pretty much ever, you know, a lot of places that you look.
I don't really know what that word means.
The climbing wall in your photo.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means.
But but I'm still not clear as to what that light is. What's dappled?
I don't know. That's why they have the word. If it meant something else, they wouldn't have the word dappled.
So I should just look up dappled.
I guess.
That really a term, dappled light?
Yeah. Really? As far as I know, I'll say it with confidence that yes, it is. But it's that light that kind of comes in and it's broken up, kind of like you know, with as if it's coming through a cookie or something like that. But it's also, it can be sort of soft enough that it also lights up your subject. It's not necessarily like a hard cookie. It's a
soft cookie.
Just Google it. Just do yourself a favor, save everybody the hassle, and go ahead.
Like
and
a chewy,
it.
Like Chips Ahoy or something. No?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that even means.
Well, it's soft cookie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Chips Ahoy in the microwave. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, something exactly like that.
Okay.
All right. So that's the topic for the challenge for next week. That's it, Adam. We're at the end here.
Great.
You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.
Spread out all over Gary Point.
AdamSchwartz.ca and also on Facebook, the Two Hosers Facebook page.
And find my stuff at alanarich.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find everything that we just talked about. That's it.
Okay.
Until next week, get out there and make better photos.